Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
From day one, Brian Koberger seemed destined to dominate headlines, though perhaps not quite like this. Criminology PhD student accused of murdering 4 University of Idaho students. Koberger's case has consistently been as confounding as it's been disturbing. From his meticulous background in crime studies to his seemingly calculated but chillingly flawed approach to the killings, every development has sparked new questions. Just when we thought we were about to get answers in a highly anticipated trial, Koberger threw everyone a curveball. He decided to plead guilty after 2.5 years, dodging the firing squad that had awaited him if convicted. Yeah. Not everybody very happy about this, including several of the families. Today, we're going to be diving deep into the psychology behind this stunning turn. Siobhan Scott going to be joining us. And while we're having that discussion, I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section here on this piece. Where is the comment section, you ask? Well, if you're listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, iHeart, wherever it may be, probably not there. But on YouTube, we have a comment section there. So if you're not on our YouTube channel yet, please do check it out. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. We have a whole, obviously, comment area there on every single video we put out for you. And we put out a lot every single day. I'd say like between 5 and 10 videos a day. So please do check us out on YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and interact and let us know your thoughts on all the cases that we cover for you. We do read them. We do interact with them. So please let us know where you think things are at, in your opinion. Okay, continuing on. We're going to dive into the psychology of this. Why would someone so obsessed with criminal notoriety choose a plea over a highly publicized trial? What internal shifts, if any, led to this decision? And was it as simple as wanting to avoid execution? Or is there something more intricate at play in the mind of Brian Koberger? Joining me now to untangle these psychological threads, Siobhan Scott, renowned psychotherapist whose expertise in understanding criminal minds brings a unique clarity to even the murkiest of motives analyzing criminal behavior, violent offenders. She has a new memoir out too, by the way, which goes through the trauma of her life, going into the complex dynamics of revenge suicide. It's something she experienced firsthand. It helps you understand some of the mindset that she comes into when discussing these cases. And she's gone through so, so much. But my goodness, the amount of insight that it has given her in the world of psychology and criminal psychology is stunning. So we're very happy to have her here. By the way, the book Nightbird, it's available wherever books are sold. I do recommend it. I really, truly do. So let's unpack some of the role of grandiosity, the strategic and perhaps desperate moves by his defense, and the potential psychological calculations behind choosing life in prison over a lethal injection or the firing squad. So we enter the conversation, keep one unsettling thought in mind. Was Koberger's decision a calculated, logical move to preserve his life? Or did he simply fold under pressure, under the inevitable reality of facing a jury where every ugly truth would spill out in a graphic, graphic way? Everything he screwed up, every mistake he made, basically, they're going to start dissecting his life and what a cluster he's been his entire life. And for someone who doesn't like being made fun of, I mean, nobody likes being made fun of, but clearly this man has some serious issues because it looks like he's had some issues in those departments growing up. He even has talked about it and documented it. Everything would be on display. Was it the embarrassment? The exposure of his poor planning of this attack, of how he got caught? Was it that exposure, just the act of the exposure of going, you got this wrong, we caught you? Was that what made him want to suddenly plea once all the carrots and all the sticks were out? Start our conversation by asking Siobhan directly, what psychological factors could have possibly driven Koberger, a man who seemed eager for infamy, to abandon his public stage, accept guilt?
I think it's a fairly simple thing that he initially probably was hoping, maybe in a fantasy kind of way, that his wonderful attorneys, so dedicated to him, were going to get him off. And being grandiose, he very likely believed that story. And it's become increasingly clear over the years that this guy's going to get the firing squad. If there was ever a person who deserved the firing squad in the state of Idaho, I think this was it. And so my guess is, you know, the lawyers tried the autism thing. Can we get the poor guy's autistic. Can we get the death penalty off the table because of that? I think they probably had to come to Jesus talk with him that, you know, this is going to be the worst possible outcome. There's mm-hmm. just no way through this. And so I think he just made a decision that, you know, may not have been from some big internal shift inside him. He doesn't want the firing squad.
Very simple. Nothing too extremely deep. Just, well, okay. Just kind of methodical, kind of the way that, you know, his brain seemed to kind of work, at least from what we understand of, you know, the way that this allegedly looked like it was planned out, the methodics of doing it, all the mechanics of doing it, almost a mechanical decision of, okay, yep, mm-hmm. the pitcher mm-hmm. is out of water. It's out of water. It is dry. This is what we have to do now. Are you surprised by this? Are you surprised? I mean, we've seen so many cases where people, even when found guilty, just still stick to their story to the grave, basically. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised mm-hmm. that Brian Koberger is one that has come out and now has said, yep, I did it?
You know, there's a part of me that was surprised, but then once I started reflecting, it's like, well, of course. I mean, if he was, and I think his attorneys are grounded in reality, they had to see that this guy's not going to get off. There's just no way. And firing squad is a scary thing. And their bottom line, their goal is to save his life, of course, to get him out if they can, but that wasn't going to happen. And so looking at it from that perspective, a lot of times these deals are done at the very last minute. And so I guess to me, it does make sense. It would have been nice if it had happened sooner.
And that's the thing about this whole moment. We're talking about literally less than a month before jury selection is about to begin. The trial going to be starting next month, supposedly, if it was going to happen. Why now? I mean, this was something that was requested by the Koberger team. This is not the prosecution deciding, hey, let's give him a plea offer. They came and asked for it and they gave it. If Bill Thompson was capable of doing that, why didn't he just do it at the beginning? Why didn't we attempt this 2.5 years ago rather than put everybody through this if we're going to even entertain the idea of offering this guy a plea offer? That to me just seems, I don't know, it seems crazy that it was never even floated early on to avoid all of this.
Yeah, agreed. I think that would have been certainly easier for everybody to adjust to rather than all the anticipation of this, what was going to be a horrendous trial for the families.
What's your take? And obviously, every family is dealing with this a little bit differently. We've heard from Steve Gonsalves and some of the other parents as well. The majority, I would say, from what we understand, are not in favor of this. There are some of the parents who are finding this to be a bit of a relief, of a okay, we don't have to go and be drugged through this. Certainly, it's got to be a relief to the surviving roommates who otherwise would have had to testify. But what's your thoughts on, you know, on folks like Steve, who really, you know, they wanted the trial. They wanted to see him go out and be put on trial and exposed for everything that he did. This kind of does seem like an easy way out to a certain extent. Is this fair to those families? Is this fair that they said, without any sort of real consultation, according to Steve, it was just a letter that was sent on Sunday night going, oh, by the way, we're going to take his plea.
Yeah, it would have been nice if the families had been allowed to be more involved in the process and be heard. And I think it's always frustrating when people feel like on a big emotional issue that their voice doesn't count. There can be a certain sense of satisfaction in having the puzzle pieces laid out and seeing the dots connected. And of course, understandably, they would like to see him suffer during the trial. They would like to see him squirm. They would like to see him called out on all the lies. And that's, I think, something that I hope can still happen to some degree, is that the pieces can be put together, at least for the families, on what exactly he did. And, you know, I'm sure there are things at this point that we still don't know, that the public isn't aware of. And it's going to, I think, help some of those families get closure if they can have all that information.
There's certainly going to be a time for victim impact statements in the courtroom where the families are going to get to say their piece to Koberger. How he's going to react is really anyone's guess. This whole thing, the way that this is ending, is exactly how BTK ended his essential reign of terror right before a trial was supposed to go down. He did exactly this. He went on to court and said, here's exactly what I did. It's a 45-minute speech where he went into great detail. Now, that is not required here for this plea deal to go forward, but there will be an opportunity for Koberger to speak. Do you think we're going to see him say anything about this? Do you think we're going to see a single word, considering even when he entered his initial plea, he stood silent and then the judge just put in the guilty plea, considering how much the evidence looks like he really, he looked up to these infamous killers and now he is one himself. Do you think he's going to follow in those footsteps? Are we going to hear the voice of Koberger talking about what he did?
It would be fascinating if he did, but at this point, you're right, he's presented as very stoic. And even though he has some commonalities, you know, with BTK and the horrific crimes, I think does have that autism flare, that schizoid flare that I've talked about, where he's just flat, he's just shut down. And I think he gets his drama from working behind the scenes and engaging in his little fantasies. And I don't think we'll see much of a public presentation from him.
When we talk about the firing squad, because that was a very real possibility for him. But I am wondering, what was the biggest fear for Koberger here of going to trial? Was it the firing squad? Do you think it was the fear of death, or was it more fear of public humiliation? I mean, this is a guy who clearly did not fit in with most of the world, had a lot of issues with it, seemed to have a lot of vengeance towards the outside for the years that he was picked on as a child and bullied, and seemed to kind of hold that very close and would lash out at people, would be very cold, very unempathetic in many, many ways. Do you think that there might have been an element of, okay, it's almost showtime, you are going to be on stage here, and everything that you like to do in the background in your little secretive world, it's all going to be put on display? I'm wondering how much of that public humiliation and just the public looking at him for what a doofus he is, was kind of maybe a scary prospect. Because I think in his mind, he really thinks he's a genius. And this would have really, really shone light on that.
It's always possible. Hard to say. He strikes me as so emotionally cold and shut down that there was a part of him that might have actually enjoyed the attention, even if it made him look like a monster, which obviously it would have. As you say, he identifies with monsters. And so there's a part of him that might have actually enjoyed the trial. I've heard reports from other mass killers, certainly from some of the mass shooters, that they enjoyed the trial process and they enjoyed the victim impact statements as much as a normal person with empathy. We'd be horrified to think that we hurt people, you know, in the way that these killers do. But the killers often enjoy hearing about the pain that they've caused other people. That's why they're murderers. That's why they try to kill as many people as they can. They have a really different way of processing in the world.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author there. Thank you so much. It is so clear we're left grappling with more than just the legal implications of Brian Koberger's plea deal. We're wrestling with unsettling insights into the mind of a man who sought to control his narrative until the very end. Siobhan pointed out in her expert analysis, it really paints a chilling portrait, a man methodically calculating his next move, perhaps less driven by remorse and more by a cold, practical desire to save himself from the harshest of punishments. And I don't know if the harshest of punishments is embarrassment for him or if it's a firing squad. It's one of those questions, like in the comments, where are you weighing in on this? I'm really curious. But what truly lingers after our conversation isn't just Koberger's chillingly methodical decision-making. It's a profound emotional toll this unexpected plea deal has taken on the victims' families. Why some find solace in avoiding a grueling trial, others, like Steve Gonsalves, feel robbed of a chance at full emotional closure. It's a stark reminder of how justice, even seemingly served, can leave wounds open rather than healed. And perhaps the most haunting question left unresolved is whether Koberger himself views this plea as an escape or just another twisted chapter in a narrative of control and manipulation. As Siobhan pointed out, there's a troubling possibility that he may derive satisfaction from still holding cards close to his chest. Secrets he'll never publicly disclose. And in the end, we're forced to confront an uncontrollable truth. Justice is rarely as emotionally neat as we want it to be, especially when dealing with minds as complicated and terrifying as Brian Koberger's. The families deserve answers, and the public deserves to understand the psychology behind such horrors. Today, Siobhan helped us shed critical light on his darkness. There's no denying we've only begun to scratch the surface, though, on this. It's going to be a lot of time. There's going to be years. There's going to be decades of studies on this brain. If he survives, sometimes prison justice can be far worse than what the state has up their sleeves. Tell me your thoughts on this. In the comment section on YouTube, if you are not there already, be sure to press subscribe it wherever you're getting the podcast. That's the most important thing. So at the end of this, if you found some value here, please do hit subscribe on the podcast platforms or on YouTube so you don't miss any of our reporting on this case and the many cases we cover for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast in True Crime Today. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. Until next time, for all of us, I am Tony Brewski. We will talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.